Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, welcome to another Rich Herring's Left Square Theatre podcast. My guest is the lovely and brilliant Julian Clary. We're filming more of these shows in October. You can come and see them being recorded from October the 16th to November the 27th, I think. Leastways, it's every Monday at the Leicester Square Theatre, 7:30 p.m. Go to leicestersquaretheatre.com to buy tickets. We have no guests confirmed as yet, but those will start being announced pretty soon, I hope. Also, we are trying to film Series 12 of the podcast. If you would like to help us do that, go to GoFasterStrike.com/Kickstarter. Every donation you make will help us film this series, and hopefully, seeing it's going quite well, maybe some or all of the next series as well. You get your hands on the Christmas Emergency Questions book. I'm sure that will be for sale after the Kickstarter has ended, but the only way to guarantee your copies for Christmas is to take part in the Kickstarter campaign. GoFasterStrike.com/Kickstarter. Thanks to everybody who's given to that. I'm so amazed and flattered by the speed we've accrued a large amount of money. We will keep making these podcasts as long as you want us to make them. That's the deal. And if you can't afford to pay, please do not feel you have to pay. If you don't want to pay, please don't feel you have to pay if you want it for free. If you would like to pay a little tiny amount, either go to the Kickstarter or gofasterstrike.com/badges and you can make a donation. Anyway, enough of that. Let's listen to Julian Clary.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who is having a twirl inserted somewhere right now. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much. Hello! Hello! Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I don't know if I've done this one. I was in Solarium the other day. I was having a tan, getting a nice bronze tan, and all the ladies there called it rehearsal. I don't know if that's going to catch on or not. So, it's been an interesting week, a week closer to my birthday here in... feel like I've aged a week anyway since the last show. Let's have a quick chat with some people in the audience. You were here last week, weren't you? We were talking about Lego Batman together. What's your name?
Luke.
Luke, have you been to the show before, Luke? You were here the last week, it was the first time. Good. Wow, you're good. And what do you do for a living, Luke? Are you a film reviewer?
I'd love to say it's very exciting.
What is it? Everything's exciting to me.
Employee benefits.
Employee benefits, that's very exciting to me. Yeah. What is it? What is What is it wanking off the employees if they've done a good job? That's what I'm imagining. Yeah, that's pretty good. Have you got a... what's your name?
Martha.
Martha, you've got a necklace on that said that... Is that in case... It says caramel on it, doesn't it? It's Tunnock's caramel. Is that so if you ever pass out and people need to know what chocolate bar is to be insane, they can just look at... Is that what you would choose, Martha? What's... you've got a neck... Will be moulded, yeah, it's good. I'm glad you thought about it. Why have you got a necklace saying Tunnock's caramel on it? Do you really like them? Did you have it especially made for you?
Is
it? Oh, from Etsy. Yeah, I've just heard about Etsy. We're having a bed made for our daughter through Etsy. Someone in Serbia is making us a bed. It's all right, isn't it? It's my wife's... I don't know what it is. I think we have beds here in England. Well, I'm glad you like the Tunnock, the wafer. Do you like Tunnock's wafer? You don't like them, do you? You don't know. You two don't like anything of it that each other like. You do like them. That's what he said about Lego Batman, wasn't it? When you watched it, you went, that was brilliant. He went, I did like it. It's just... What's the shittest one you've seen of the films?
Minions.
Wow. Is that the actual Minions film? Not Despicable Me, but the specific Minions. Yeah, too many Minions in it. You know, you want to... Like, put a couple of Minions in... They're the comic relief. Don't make them the centre of it, do they? So yeah, it is. It's like Shrek, the one with all the Shreks, isn't it? Too many Shreks. Anyway, look, we're going to carry. Thanks, it's been lovely to meet you. You're a nice couple. I'm glad you've bred. That's what we've learned a lot about you. Employee benefits, eh? Is it all any employee anywhere? Can you just go in and go, well, done, mate, is a benefit, or is it specifically in the company you work in? Oh, the companies you work for, it's benefits. Yeah, don't understand. Anyway, our guest this week is probably, he's best known for lots of things, but he's probably best known for Let's Do Lunch with Gino and Mel. That's why we're here. He was our guest on that. That's why we're here to see him. I can't believe it's Julian Clary, ladies and gentlemen. Julian Clary. Come in, pull up a microphone.
How lovely.
How are you doing? How's the fan for you?
It's fine at the moment. How nice to spend some time with a proper bloke. Because, you know, a lot of my time, I don't know if you know, but I'm a homosexual. And so I spend a lot of time with other homosexuals, yeah. But you are a bloke, aren't you?
You'll learn to love me. You'll find a way through this.
No, you have a certain rugged charm.
There is.
If you half close your eyes, he looks like Richard Gere.
So, I'm enjoying this. It's fine. It's going to be good. I hope this is going to be the whole hour of just... This is almost my dream come true. What about Gino and Mel? Do you remember doing Let's Do Lunch with Gino and Mel?
I do, yeah. Yes. I do, and he was cooking lamb.
Was he?
And he was trying to drum up sympathy for the farmers. He said, it's been a terrible year for the lamb farmers. And I said, it's not been such a good year for this lamb either. And you know, I never expected to use that joke twice. This is my kind of show.
That's good. I've been to Gino DiCampio's house.
Have you?
Yeah, because I was looking to buy a house, and he was selling his house.
Have you got that much money?
It wasn't that good a house, I have to say. It was very cheap, actually. It was an unpleasant area. He was moving out, rightly so. I think he must have bought it near the start of his career. He's got all of his own... I've mentioned it before, but I don't think I've mentioned his name. I didn't know who he was, because the estate agent was all very excited, going, there's someone a bit famous coming. And I was annoyed, because she wasn't going, I'm excited showing you around, Richard. You,
quite.
Yeah.
How
it's almost like she had no idea who I was.
And, can't understand it.
I worked out who Gino DiCampio was, because he had in his kitchen, he had 6 cookery books, and they were all written by him.
And hasn't he got 6 ovens as well?
He has got a lot of ovens, yeah. And he's got a whole shelf just for his sunglasses.
Has he?
Yeah. And my wife assumed he'd broken up with his wife because the master bedroom was just his clothes, but she keeps her clothes downstairs. Anyway, there we go. That's Gino DiCampo.
It's going ever so well. I've learned so much.
But you live in Noel Coward's house.
It's my house.
He must be furious.
Yeah, someone misheard me once saying I live in Noel Coward's house. I said, what do you want to live in an old council house for? But no, I do. The very house in Kent where he had all those fabulous parties in the 20s and 30s. And I've tried to recreate an element of that. But, you know, because he had, you know, the... what's his name? Laurence Olivier, yes. Vivian Leigh, Joan Crawford. Who did I get round? Christopher Biggins.
I saw a picture of you with Twiggy and Twiggy with Noel Coward. Was that both in the same house? Was that...
No. I interviewed... I did a programme about Noel Coward. And Twiggy knew him back in the 60s before he died.
Yes. he's in Goodnight Sweetheart. He's a character in Goodnight Sweetheart. That's all I know about him.
It's a little bit fierce this
time. Is it too far?
Yeah,
you asked for a fan, Julie. I can turn it down. It was a good call. Let's try this. That's gone faster.
Just turn it down a bit the other way. And could you just tip it downwards a bit?
Yeah.
Times I've said that. Thank you.
I'll do anything.
No, too far. Again. We'll get this right, and then
there we go.
That's good. Let's try that.
Okay.
It's good for now.
Okay. I'm not in the fan, so I'm getting a little sheen of that. You've made the right choice here.
Yeah,
but it's good.
Hot.
I've
played this theatre before. I did Taboo here many years ago, and it's a bit of a sweatbox. But we had some fun here back then.
What kind of fun did you have?
Cocaine.
The old nose cocaine there. That's how they take that. Well, I was quite surprised. Like, there's a few things I want to talk to you about, obviously. And the one of the first things it says on Wikipedia about you is that you're openly gay. I'm kind of amazed that phrase.
It's an awful phrase, isn't it?
But that's it's such an odd thing to say. Yeah, we know. Yeah. And B, it sort of implies...
He just doesn't care.
He's so open about it. There's a few things we'll get on to talking about that. But
are you openly straight?
I am. Well, I'm open. I think I am probably openly straight. You wouldn't ever say it, would you? I kissed a man in a guy in college, you know. So
carry on.
It was quite
nice.
Were
you experimenting?
I was showing off, probably.
Did it arouse you?
No, he was a bit stubbly, which I'm sure he felt the same as well.
Yes.
That was my major problem with it. The rest of it was nice. A kiss is a kiss, right?
The first man I kissed had a beard,
right.
And that was a funny experience, all that scratchiness going on.
Probably weirder things happen later on. But I want to talk to you about the opening. It's impossible to avoid, isn't it? Do you find with innuendo comedy that it's hard to be serious? Because I saw you being interviewed and you're talking about something quite serious and you said it's very hard, and then I imagine people just start going...
I know, it's not in my mind half the time, it just happens. I was complaining about my phone line, I was on the phone to BT, and the woman was being very formal with me, and then she said, will you hold? And she tickled her own fancy, and she... She was off. So it does happen, and it's bound to happen.
Yeah.
So I understand.
You can cope with it if people are in the middle of a series.
Yeah, it'll only last for this evening. You won't be talking in innuendos for the rest of your career.
Okay, I'll try not to. Well.
Such as it is.
Such
as it
is. There can't be long to go either, so... So it came out again. Oh, it did it again. I wanted to talk to you about how you got started, because I'm quite fascinated by it. We had Paul Merton on the other week, and I'm quite fascinated by those early days of alternative comedy that you were very much involved in.
Yes.
And it sounds like you were doing... I mean, there was lots of different acts you were doing and lots of...
Well, it was the same act with different names.
Okay.
When I first started, I was called... I did a double act called Glad and May. Depends how far back we go.
Right, okay.
That was when I was at university, so that was in 1980, 81.
Right.
Then the girl that I was... The opening line was, "Hello, I'm Glad and I'm glad to be here." That's what she said. And I said, "Hello, I'm May, and I may be glad to be here." That was the level. Anyway, Glad got a job acting, so then I was left on my own. So then I changed my name to Gillian Pieface.
Yes.
And that was...
I like that name.
I was going, I mean, in those days, you didn't work very often. There wasn't anywhere to play. There was a vegetarian restaurant in Highgate called the Earth Exchange.
Right.
And there was no stage. It was just a restaurant, and you would sort of perform standing in the fireplace. And I acquired this little mongrel dog, and I was living in a bedsit in New Cross. I couldn't leave the dog behind, so I used to take her with me. And she had nowhere to go, so she used to sit next to me. And I noticed that after a while... the audience weren't really looking at me. She was a very charismatic dog, Fanny the Wonder Dog, and she became the star of the show. And then I was lying in the bath one day, and I was listening. The television was on in the other room, and the theme to Dynasty came on, which gave me the idea to call myself the Joan Collins Fan Club. And Gillian Pieface was she was a Mother Earth figure.
Okay.
Used to wear a big black caftan. And I would do the laying on of hands. So if you were a punter, I would say, I'm going to do the laying on of hands. And it's not working. I'm going to have to plunge you into darkness. And I would lift up the caftan, put it over your head, and much hilarity would ensue on account of the oral sex imagery.
That's good.
You see. So then I thought, I don't really like dressing up. I didn't want to impersonate a woman. I wanted to be a man wearing lots of makeup. So that's when I did the black rubber and stuff. And Fanny's part got bigger and bigger. And at the same time, she used to do these impersonations of the Pope. And the Queen Mother was one of her best. She'd sit on the stool and I would lift up her gums like that. And there was a row of perfect brown teeth. The resemblance was uncanny. And at the same time, there was more and more venues, rooms above pubs and things. And Paul Merton was doing an act in his pyjamas. Did he tell you about
that? Yes, well, yeah.
The man in his pyjamas.
Yeah.
And Joe Brand was the sea monster.
That's right, yeah.
And all sorts of bizarre. And it wasn't just comedy. There was jugglers and... it was sort of variety.
Yeah.
I feel very old talking about.
Well, you're not very old.
No.
And you're still looking incredibly amazing. Oh. If I'd been at college with you, I would definitely have snogged.
No, you would not.
I wouldn't have been allowed.
Security would have been called.
And it was quite a quick transition then between that stuff and getting that got onto TV quite quickly.
Well, it was about 5 years. So the circuit got bigger. I'm sort of jumping ahead, but there were places like the Comedy Store and Jongleurs, and you slowly got onto better gigs. And then there was a show called Saturday Night Live, and the producers would come in, and word would get around that the producers were in, and one by one people were plucked from obscurity. Harry Enfield would just be gone from the circuit. And what was his name that used to compare it?
Ben Elton.
Yeah. How quickly we forget.
You do forget.
Anyway, it was a very long wait till I got my turn, and I think because they would have a guest comedian on each week,
and it was
on Channel 4, I think. And anyway, if it went well, then you'd get your own series. It was sort of as simple as that.
Yeah,
and so it was a long, long wait, and then eventually, I think they ran out of other acts to have on, and Fanny and I were chosen.
Yeah. I was going to introduce you as being the host of Trick or Treat because it kind of tickled me that you were doing a show with Mike Smith.
Yes,
it was a kind of game show that you did together.
It was a Saturday Night ITV game show with Mike Smith.
But then I watched a clip of Mike Smith talking. Well, do you remember the clip of Jimmy Greaves on
Jimmy Greaves was being interviewed on like Breakfast Television, very early incarnation of Breakfast Television, and Mike Smith was there talking about the show.
Yes.
And Jimmy Greaves, who I quite liked until this point, said, "Oh, what's the, but you know, how can you be on that show with that, you know,
prancing puff?"
Yes, I think that's what he said.
People would say that in those days. When I was writing my autobiography, I looked up some old press cuttings, and it was, you know, words like that were just, that was in the headline. Get this poof off our screens and stuff. It's just how it was.
It's sort of incredible. And Mike Smith, he, you know, said, "Oh, we maybe do a show with you about bigotry or something." He came back at him and stood up for the show. Yeah. So I decided not to take the piss out of Mike Smith because I was glad that he did that.
No, I was very fond of him.
Yeah. It's quite an odd pairing, you and Mike Smith.
It was. It was a strange show. It didn't come back for a second series. No.
was that sort of TV trying to think, well, we've got to have someone how was that pairing put together, do you think? Was that, had they chosen you and then thought, we need someone who the viewers will not be scared of, or had they chosen Mike Smith and thought, he's a bit boring, let's bring in a guy dressed in later?
I don't, you know, no one told me what the producers were thinking, but it was something like, and it was my job to, because I quite like plucking people from the audience if it's a game show.
Yeah.
But I like choosing them myself. But in that show, of course, they had to be researched. And so it was pretending to pick someone that you actually knew all about. And of course, that didn't really work.
No.
When I did Sticky Moments later, I said, no, I really am going to pick people that no one knows who they are. And that worked better because they weren't certified extrovert.
Yes, yes.
People.
Well, that's interesting because I think TV does that so much, where they're trying to cover, they're putting safety nets everywhere, and you're not really allowed to improvise. I think in hardly any shows now, you know, everyone gets the questions in advance, everyone knows who they're talking to, but you don't get the awkward spontaneity that we're enjoying.
Is it awkward?
No, it's fine. I'm
just please don't lunge at me, Richard. No need for it.
So look, I'm going to talk about this quickly, and we'll. But I think this is it. Hopefully, I can cover an interesting angle from this. But it's sort of weird to have a comedian and a career that is sort of defined by one moment so strongly. And I think what's sort of interesting about the moment that you're defined by in a lot of people's eyes is, well, there's sort of lots going on. So with this Norman Lamont thing that people will remember, I think, from the British Comedy Awards. Andy McCaich made a good point on Twitter today, saying that actually the fisting line is actually the setup to a joke.
Very good point, because people forget, people think I just said I fisted Norman Lamont, who was the Chancellor of the Exchequer, but the punchline was quite good for one of my jokes. Talk about a red box.
Yeah.
Just came to me on the night.
It was good. But you didn't get, you sort of got to it and then sort of, it came, because everyone was so amazed. In the room it plays like incredible. Richard and Judy are laughing, Martin and Mars, they're laughing. You look around all these celebs, they're really laughing at this. But obviously it was jumped upon by the press. Like, and I feel like in a way that, having seen the Jimmy Greaves stuff, it felt like this is just, we've been waiting for an opportunity to get you. Do you not, because they didn't like the idea of you being openly gay. So they were,
well,
do you think so? I mean, I think because it's not that bad.
You see, it's difficult.
We did a show 2 years later called Fist of Fun. And
yes,
we'd come up with that title before you'd said your thing. But we thought, you know, someone's going to spot what that's about. And no one doesn't bat an eyelid. And so, admittedly, it was a quite outrageous thing to say on live TV, I suppose.
It's so difficult looking back after all these years. I mean, how long ago was it? It was such a long time ago.
Yes.
93,
I think, yeah.
Well, and it's difficult to remember the truth because, you know, you can impose all sorts of things and you think that's a good story. And I think my take on it is that there were other things going on in my life at that time, and it wasn't all about my career.
No.
And so I was having a bit of a difficult time and I needed space.
Yeah.
So if you want to clear your diary quite quickly, that's a very good way to do it.
Yeah.
And having, I was, you know, I'd been on this upward trajectory and it was all a bit much, and then there it was, my boyfriend was ill and this, that and the other, And suddenly it was, oh, I was just calmed down now.
Do you think there was an element that you were deliberately doing that, though?
No, I think the universe was doing, this is what I say in retrospect.
But, you know, I really feel like you had to explain to the people who were offended about it what it meant, right? Yes. It wasn't offensive because you'd have to get, if a child went, what does that mean? Oh, it means he's punching him or whatever.
Yeah.
You'd have to explain it. So everyone was gleefully, and what I slightly find interesting, I think wasn't Piers Morgan one of the people who really went for you?
Yeah.
And then you, but subsequently you've been on Piers Morgan's chat show as well.
The Life Stories thing. Yeah. Yes.
Was that a difficult decision to go on that show knowing that he sort of attempted to take you down, or was there a...
I'd forgotten the connection. Right. So after I did it, Paul Merton phoned me up and said, "You know, he was the editor at the time."
Right.
So he caused that whole sort of furore.
Yeah.
But I don't feel bitter about it. I mean, I'm slightly bored with it. You understand.
No, I do understand. But I do understand.
One will never escape it, and I know when I die that the obituary will say it'll probably be the headline.
But on the plus side, when Norman Lamont dies, it will also be that.
Yes.
And are there any modern-day politicians and extreme sexual practices that aren't really out in the open yet for the public that you would like to combine for this podcast to give us some rights?
No, there's... there probably are. Well, there are things that surprise me that go on now.
Yes.
Yes. Do you know what felching is?
Yeah, well, yeah, I do, but I knew about that a long time ago.
I'd say it appeals to me, but it does go on.
Yes. It's whatever floats your boat is what I say. That's my... talking of felching, have you ever met Brian Blessed? Oh, I'd imagine.
I think I have, yeah. Yes.
Has he been to your house, Brian Blessed?
No, I didn't invite him.
I mean, just everyone's got a story about Brian Blessed. I wondered if you... Because I was saying last week, when I met him, he said he was going to Mars. Not for a TV show, for in reality.
Yes. Is he really that ebullient?
I think he is.
Is it an act, or is it like that at home, do you think?
I think he probably is.
I find I'm a bit suspicious, that it's just what's expected of him now.
Yeah, well, I think... But then that's a sort of interesting showbiz thing, that he's become associated... He was quite a serious actor up to a point before. Yes. He was in I, Claudius and things like that, I think, wasn't he? He did quite boomy characters, but... He's definitely played up to it. And since the Gordon's Alive, Flash Gordon,
yes,
that's become, so you're right. He's sort of playing that character in real life, but I think he probably is.
You can't blame him.
But it's inhabited him, I think. I think it's him all the time.
Is he married?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It'd be nice to talk to his wife about him if we're really that interested in Brian Blessed. I'm glazing over.
Okay. All right. I've got a new emergency question, and... If you can't think of an answer, I've got an answer for you, but I'm hoping you'll remember the answer. What is the strangest thing you've found in the embers of a bonfire?
Oh.
You have a good answer to this, and I will prompt you if you can't. You had a piano that you played secretly in your house.
Do you want to tell the story, or shall I?
No, I don't.
Yes, no, I was...
Or we could just tell people to buy your book and they can read it themselves.
Yes, it's quite near the beginning. I was quite... shy about any creativity as a child. So, and I, my parents bought me this beautiful old piano, and it was an upright. There you go. And it had ivory keys and those things with a candle. It was a beautiful piano. Yeah. And I would only play it when everyone was out for some reason. And I used to make up my own songs and everything. And I came home from school one day, and my father was down the end of the garden having a bonfire. And I wandered down and said, "Oh, hello." And I, sticking out of it, I noticed all the keys. And they wanted the space in the dining room for some reason. And he'd burnt my piano. And I've never forgiven him. I mean, our relationship has never been the same.
It's strange what people... Weirdly, I just came up with that question. It's sort of strange because people... It's weird what people will burn... And the things you remember that people burn are always the most horrific things. But imagine having a piano and saying, I'll burn it rather than just give it to someone.
I know, that upset me as well. Yeah. He wasn't to know I've ever played it.
No, you're secretly playing it. So.
Had he not burnt that piano, I may have had another life as a songwriter or something instead of being a camp comic and renowned homosexual. My life could have been different.
Do you think if Elton John's piano had been burnt, I think it'd have got, I think he cared enough to go and buy another get another piano.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've since bought. I've now got Noel Coward's piano in my house because it was for sale. I thought that'd be nice. Bring it back to where it used to be. And I assumed the moment I sat in front of it that I would come back to me and I would start playing one of his lovely tunes.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work like that.
It doesn't work like that. It's a shame, isn't it?
No.
It should work like that. Good question, isn't it? The embers of the bonfire. You know it. You know it. I'll ask you another emergency question. It's going to be a random one, and I hope it's not a terrible one.
What's this book, then?
This is my book of emergency questions. They're very popular amongst these 100 people in this room.
Has it been published?
Well, I've self-published it.
Oh, of course you have.
Yeah. But it's, you know, it's doing very well. It's doing all right. And you get more money if you do it yourself.
So it's just a book of questions.
It's a book of stupid questions. And I was, what is the sexiest TV puppet, I was going to ask you.
Oh, this is the sort of thing students would like,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, it is. Now you're getting it.
So is that my question?
Yeah.
The sexiest TV puppet.
If you had to have sex with a TV puppet.
Oh, please.
If you had to be attracted to a TV puppet. Is there any TV? There's some.
There was one of the Thunderbirds. They had lovely eyelashes. I can't remember his name, though.
I reckon it was Gordon Tracy.
And was he in a uniform?
Yeah.
No, that would do the trick.
There's a lot of the. You get all the Thunderbirds together.
Really?
I wouldn't bother with brains so much, maybe.
No, you'd have liked Lady Penelope, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I liked the... I quite like Zuki from Fireball XL5. He was sort of a creature rather than a human of any kind. There was also Aquamarina. Do you remember Aquamarina? She was nice.
Yes, I remember the tune.
Yeah.
Yes.
And she was like a mermaid. I think she was based on this... I think...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
They're both based on the, what's her name, the wife of the guy. Come on, you're my nerd. Gerry Anderson's wife, Sylvia Anderson. I think they're both based on Sylvia Anderson. So I'd like to...
The poor woman over there is a terrible view of me. You can only see my back. And who is that with you? What's your name?
Lovely.
Yes. How are you? How old are you, Tom? 42. You're never too old for a hoodie, are you?
That's amazing. The way you sensed him there behind you. You knew.
I honed in.
You did. You didn't even see it. He's in the dark. He's behind you, and yet still somehow.
I used to do jokes about bald people.
Yes.
And sometimes you couldn't find a bald person. I used to go right to the back of the room to find a bald man in order to say, you haven't got much hair, but you've got a lovely head of skin. It was not really worth the trouble, but... needs must.
Well, So you can. I'll let you have
I
that.
I think it's got quite small print.
It has.
For the over 50s.
Some of my older, and I'm nearly 50 myself, so I'm finding it a little bit myself. I didn't.
Are you having like a 50th birthday?
Well, with so much is going on that I don't think we're going to do anything because I'm moving house and we're doing Edinburgh and.
Are you moving into Gino's house?
And we're not. We're moving into a different place, thankfully.
Oh, you've got to do something for your 50th.
I don't think we were. It's so I went to my mum was 80 yesterday, and the day before I had a meal with my family to celebrate my 50th, even though it was a little bit early. So we sort of done a little thing.
A meal.
I've accepted my age.
Coming round for a meal.
It was very nice.
Okay, no, I think you'll regret that day. I think one ought to mark the decades.
Well, I did one for 40, and then I just got very unhappy. I was very unhappy about turning 40, and I got very drunk, and like it was sort of all the ghosts of your past come back. You know, and like you invite everyone, and then the girl that I'd been seeing recently turned up with this very handsome actor, and then someone else was there. There was someone I really liked who I'd been out with, and then we'd split up, but I still liked her. And she turned up with a guy who'd been out with someone else who I'd really liked, and then gone out with him. So it was this weird thing where this, you know, all these ghosts of girlfriends.
Were you crying in the toilet?
I more or less, I had to be taken home.
Very sensitive.
Yeah, I'm very sensitive underneath it all. I'm very sensitive.
A little
above
tip
it.
For you.
Yeah.
Don't invite your exes to the next party.
I've realised that
might
now.
Have a better time.
That's what I've realised now. So I'm going to go out with my wife and daughter and
for
go
a meal.
We're going to go to the rain. It is going to be two
Tell
meals.
Tell me you're not going to a Harvester Inn.
We're going to.
I'll just kill myself now.
We're going to the Rainforest Cafe for lunch.
Are you?
Yeah, it's pretty bad. And then my wife's taking me somewhere nice for dinner. But we're going to the Science Museum, I think. I went to the British Museum on my... Different folks, different... So you take your canes and I go and look
and
at some old
house.
Things.
Whereabouts is your new house?
It's in Hertfordshire.
OK. It's Can you be more specific? Countryside.
Well, no, because these people will come and find me. You know, I don't want them to know where I live.
Is it town or country?
It's a little village in Hertfordshire. It's kind of near to Hitchin.
Okay, I bet they're thrilled. You never guess who's moved in down the road.
I tell you, what happened, the last time I was there dropping some stuff off, a lady was walking her dog past me. She said, "Yo, you moving in here?" I said, "Yes, yeah, yes. Your in-laws live in Welling, don't they?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "Yeah, and you're not moving in until the end of June," which I thought was the case. She said, "Yeah, yeah." I said, "Yeah, we've always been talking about you. I had to look you up on the internet. I didn't know who you were."
But they are quite
sure
nosy in village. I live in a village. And, you know, they like to mix and mingle. And they like to try and involve you.
Yes.
They'll be opening the cat's home before you know it.
Yes. Do you manage to get out of that sort of stuff? Or do you get involved in that?
Well, I'm quite good at being unfriendly. I'm not afraid of an uncomfortable pause. If people ask me something I don't want to do, I don't want to do. So, so no, they've tried, but I've beaten them off, as it were.
Yes, good. Well, I'll try and do that. But yeah, we went to the fete. There was a summer fete, and we went there, and nothing happened at all. We didn't get to talk to anyone. So I think I'm going to be fine. I think if it was you, there might be some issues. But luckily, I've managed to stay
Paul
under
O'Grady,
the radar.
Paul O'Grady lives in the same village.
Oh, see.
There are a lot of homosexuals in the village. There really ought to be a cull.
So, and you're like Paul Merton. Did Paul write Terry and Julian with you?
Yes, he wrote Sticky Moments with me.
Sticky
and
Moments.
He's terribly clever, Paul, as we know, but he's very good at writing jokes that, you know, in my line of business, and the work really well. So I don't know how he does that, but he does.
Yeah, he studies comedy, doesn't he? He's a big student of comedy. And you do lots of Just a Minutes as well.
What joke did he write for me? Oh, this was for a radio show.
Okay.
I don't know if this is worth repeating. We're in a restaurant. The scene was in a restaurant. I said, "I'll have the chef's special." And no. "Do you want the chef's special?" says the waiter. And I say, Yes, but let me have my dinner first. Something like that. That was one of Paul Merton's jokes. There was another scene in an army barracks, yeah. And the sergeant major said to me, top or bottom? And I said, let me get unpacked first. A joke along similar lines, but we have to credit Paul Merton with those.
Okay, I'm glad to know. So did you what it seems quite an unlikely pairing of comedians in a lot of ways, the two of you, but you obviously have hit it off. He talks very warm about you as well.
Yeah, no, he makes me laugh, yeah. and he always has. And yeah. when we used to come around to my place, I would buy a packet of fondant fancies.
Yes.
And we'd have a meal. Do some writing.
This is why I look like I do, because I like eating food and not taking cocaine. That is the.
I don't take cocaine anymore. No. Could I just say?
No.
The quality these days.
But your books are slightly about that. But you wrote your book when you were 45, and so it's about that. So it's the same thing. My show's about turning 50 and feeling you've entered a new continent, I suppose, isn't it? Where the things
you knew what.
A new continent. I sort of see it as, I think being young and being old, you're on two continents, and the older continent is the continent of the incontinent. And, but things have changed. You drift apart, I think, don't
yes.
you? From and you can't go... Well, some people do go back into that. Some 50 and 60-year-olds do still dabble in that.
Yes, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
It sort of evolves. And people often say to me in interviews, don't you miss all the lycra and the makeup and the dressing up? And you sort of don't. And then, you wander down Old Compton Street some Friday nights and you see some sad old queen squeezed into something unsuitable. And you think, well, I'm glad I'm not like that.
Yeah. I mean, you sort of, it's about maturing. It's interesting because I think as a comedian, it's sort of about maturing, but also you retain that. It's a silly job and it's a childish job.
Yes.
And it's the positive side of childishness, I think, that the good comedians have.
Well, you never really grow up. You have your inner child, don't you?
Yes.
And it's always accessible.
Well, you still feel the same as, you still feel like you're young. I think it's about, I've got a complaint letter from someone who says, I'm a nearly 50-year-old man who hasn't grown up and will be an embarrassment to my children for being so old and that sort of thing. But I sort of go, that's sort of the act. That's the act. You've
Is this the show
the
you've just done? Or
no, it's the new one. It's the new one coming up. So.
Oh, so how long do you wait between shows?
I tour in the spring and then I write a new show in like 6 weeks and then keep on working on it as I'm touring it as well. So I'll do Edinburgh. I'm doing Edinburgh. And so far, I do them all every year now.
You did like what, 50 dates or something?
Yeah, yeah.
In the spring.
I do 50 dates in the spring, and I'll do a bit more, 60 or 70, and I'll do Edinburgh usually, and do.
So it'll be a new show for Edinburgh, is what
yeah.
I'm saying.
So I'll preview it, and then I'll do Edinburgh, and by the end of Edinburgh, hopefully it's good enough, and I've got enough ideas to then make it 90 minutes.
And then you do another tour next spring.
Yeah, but then the same show. So I tour that show, and then I write a new show. So I don't think they're here to talk about.
To wait about 3 years.
Do you?
I always think people get sick of me.
Yeah.
If you keep saying it's me again.
they do. Yeah, they do get sick. I think my audience have sort of worked out kind of rota system. It's like arable farming, where they'll go, right, you go this year.
Yeah.
Let me know if there was anything good. You'll do a best of show in 4 or 5 years. We'll see if it comes up. I really like to. Well, because I think my shows are always a little bit different as well, so it's not... And this is probably a bad thing. I don't think I've completely settled on a persona. So I can do a political show, and I can do a silly show, and I can do a thoughtful show. So they're all a little bit different, but they're mainly about me masturbating. That's if there's a theme to my work...
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? When you turn yourself into a product,
yeah.
as we do, you just have to keep talking about yourself... It's funny. It's a funny life. You get quite self-absorbed.
Yeah, but that is sort of what it is. I mean,
my husband works in an office, and you know, I have no idea what he does. He's tried to tell me several times, but I'm so bored.
But I saw you say one of your interviews talking about how he gets up and goes to work, and you're in bed, and then by the time he gets home, you're in bed again, and so he only sees you lying down.
He works very, very hard,
and
in whatever it is in this office, gets up, goes to work, at about 7:30, and I'm in bed. Comes back after midnight. There was a 6-month period where he never once saw me standing up. I was just a prone figure under the duvet.
But it sounds like that sort of suits you. It's nice to have the commitment, but still be. I think you're quite a. You like your own company.
I do. Now, we're neither of us very needy, so no. That is fine. And I think it's important to try and remain faithful.
Yes.
But there are times. I was at the car wash the other day. You know how erotic these car washes are? 5 or 6 swarthy men leaping all over you with hose pipes and squeegees. And I knew this is wrong. I knew it was wrong. And for a start, we haven't got a car.
With my marriage, I've been married for 5 years, and, you know, I sort of think it's nice to be faithful, as you say. But, like, I don't get any offers anymore. So, in a way, there's no kudos in being faithful. If no one's interested in it, you can go, yes, I haven't slept with anyone, because no one's interested.
No, you're not.
So, you know, you need to have the temptation to be able to go home and go, yes, I've successfully resisted the temptation. Otherwise, it's not an impressive virtue, fidelity.
And who did you marry?
I married my wife. Worked out very well for us. She was a comedian and she's a children's author. She's
called really?
Katie Wilkins. She's lovely.
And you've got children?
We've got a child and another one on the way.
Breeding going on.
It is. It's late in life, but...
Oh, this is why you've got to keep working, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
You've got responsibilities. There'll be school fees next.
We'll hopefully not have to do that, but we'll see. Well, hopefully the education will still exist in 4 or 5 years' time. I think it's one of the things that they're... It's not that important to, like, basic NHS and fire services. It's not that important to the Conservative government.
And have you got any pets?
We've just got a dog, but we haven't. I've only met it once. It's still with its mother at the moment. So it's a puppy. We got a cat that I have had for a while.
No, go back
I
to don't the like. Dog.
What's the dog is a husky crossed with a German shepherd.
Oh.
It's a big dog.
Don't go and collect it.
It's going to be big. It's cute at the moment.
I don't like huskies. They can be vicious. No, one attacked my Valerie
a couple of
years ago. Yeah, grabbed her by the scruff of the neck.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, you know, it'll protect us from small dogs, which is a good thing. And we got a cat. We had two cats, but one of the cats died.
Oh.
Quite young. They were rescue cats, and they were a bit... they'd been interbred, so they were... He's very stupid, our cat Smithers. I wish he died... Out of the two, if one of them had to go, if it had to be one of them, the other one was lovely. I quite like him, he's very stupid. Let's do an emergency question. It'll save us.
Yeah. So it's a good ruse, isn't it? Because it's a plug for your book.
It is. Well, if you could have all your teeth replaced by psychic orbs that could tell you all future events by telepathy, but would scream at a high-pitched volume every time you opened your mouth... Would you go ahead with the teeth replacement operation?
Could I have the question again?
Yep. I'm surprised you haven't been asked this before. If you could have all your teeth replaced by psychic orbs, so they're spheres, but they're teeth-sized, I'd imagine.
They're psychic.
They're psychic. They can tell you all future events by telepathy, so they'll just beam into your mind everything that's going to happen.
Okay.
But they would, if you opened your mouth, they would scream at a high-pitched volume every time you opened your mouth. Would you go ahead with the teeth replacement operation? It's a perfectly valid question.
Okay, so it's sort of yes or no answer. Yeah. I think probably not.
Okay. That's all I need to know.
I'm quite psychic anyway. So
yeah, are you?
I don't need orbs. I get little twitches.
Do you?
Yes.
What have you predicted?
I can tell when someone's pregnant.
Okay.
Before they know themselves.
Okay.
And I can tell when someone's dying.
Okay. Oh, God.
Before they know themselves. Oh, and I can tell when someone's lying as well.
Okay.
I don't know if that's psychic. It's just.
Yeah, but that's an empathetic thing. How have you? Am I going to be? Am I doing all right? I kind of worry about dying because I've got tiny children.
When's your 50th?
12th of July. I feel like I won't make it.
No, you'll be fine.
Oh, well, okay, thank God. Now I'm just going to go and run in the road and stuff because you've said I'm safe. Is it like that? If I can I take dangerous? Can I do dangerous stunts now?
No, it's more when people are ill.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Damn it. And, well, you've got loads of things coming up, haven't you? There's a play that's been written for you.
Yes.
Le Grand Mort.
Yes. The director, Chris Renshaw, phoned me up and said, did I think I could handle... No. Did I think I could cope with a two-hander or something like that?
Yes.
It's a terrible life, Richard. Trying to think up filth all the time. No, I'm doing it's a play that someone wrote for me. Yes, and we're doing it at the Trafalgar Studios. Sure. It's starting in September, and I think because I don't want to get bored. I think it's important to stretch yourself.
Yes,
and just ignore them making up their own jokes.
Yes, they
now.
Are.
So I have no idea if I can do it. It's proper acting required, apparently.
Yeah. But you've done plays before. You've done the Taboo and...
I did Taboo and I did Cabaret.
Cabaret, yeah.
I played the MC in Cabaret. But the trouble is, you know, because I like we do, you just chat away. You know vaguely what you're going to talk about. It doesn't really matter what order the words come out in. And... but if you're doing musical theatre, people are quite precious, you know. And if you say the words in the wrong order or in a different inflection, their performance is ruined. And I was bored in a matinee, and there was a bit where I was on stage as the MC, and someone walked. This boy had to walk past, and I had to say "Willkommen," and I was bored, so I changed this, and I said "How common." Instead, and I was called to the company manager's office
right.
and given a dressing down for changing the words. So,
yes.
So you know, I understand. Apparently, in the real theatre, you can't do that.
And do you worry? Because
I'm also worried that someone's going to cough, and I'll say, "Oh, you'll need to suck a fisherman's friend," or something like that. Because it's a very small venue, and the audience will be literally where you are.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I mean, I just think it's doing the same thing every day and not being allowed to change it.
Yes.
That's what I would be scared of about taking
the play. Yes, I am quite scared about it.
Yeah.
And it's a dark comedy, but, you know, there aren't that many laughs in it. So, and it's very reassuring, isn't it, getting a laugh?
Yes.
I can't understand how you can do, like, Shakespeare, where you... on stage for 2 hours, you've no idea if anyone's enjoying it or not until you get to the end, and then you get your applause.
Yes.
So that went well. We kind of need the reassurance.
Well, but that's what's interesting about comedy, and that's what's interesting when people tell you one isn't a funny comedian. You know, if someone complains about you, because we literally have every night a barometer of whether we're funny or not. We have a literal, you know, job that someone's marking our work as we go every single night. So you know if it's not working, if it's not funny. But, yeah, as an actor, it must be quite nice because you kind of don't have to, you know.
You have to
feel the silence, I suppose.
Yes, I'm dreading that, though.
Yeah. That's interesting. But with the pantos, which is still a form of play.
Oh, yes, but you can do what you like in pantos.
You're allowed to mess around.
There's no fourth wall. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
Constantly, I mean, you come out of character and you can talk to the... Would you mind keeping your legs slightly closer together? Trying to work here. And then you carry on with the show.
Well, and what's quite interesting... I mean, I do find it interesting that that history of that kind of the pantomime thing and the camp thing in pantomime, it's sort of an interesting thing because people are... In the past, when homosexuality was illegal, people would come to the theatre and see that sort of... comedy and Kenneth Williams and all that sort of stuff on the radio.
Yes.
It's kind of interesting that people enjoy it in a theatrical situation, you know what I mean, and accept it. But it's also quite interesting that you're doing very, very risque jokes in front of families and children.
Yes, I know. We did the panto at the Palladium last year, and I had a scene with the aforementioned Paul O'Grady.
Yes.
And we came on, and he was playing the Baroness, and I was Dundini. And how did it go? It was something about, how lovely to see you. Do you remember, we've known each other for years. Do you remember when we were in the circus together? And I said, yes, I was the human cannonball. I used to shoot over the ringmaster's back. And it's quite, you know, a strong joke.
Yeah.
But they couldn't touch you for it because, you know, it's an innuendo, it's got double meaning. And we would look askance at the audience.
I find it's a fascinating thing. It's a fascinating thing that that's, you know, when you play festivals of stand-up, you know, there's often the families in the audience and you kind of have to decide, am I going to do my set or am I going to leave because I haven't got any jokes that will work for five-year-olds? So I just do the set and people will get very, you know, will sometimes get upset. I'll say at the beginning, this is going to get racy, it's up to you if you want to stay in. But it's sort of interesting that you can go to a different environment. And I think that sort of is what's interesting about that, you know, the Norman Lamont thing is that that was still in that panto tradition, really.
Yes.
It's crazy that that was picked up on, really.
It was. I write books for children as well.
Yes,
and so And I was doing a children's book event in Hull yesterday. What a shithole that is. And so it was a lovely... I really enjoy it, you know. I read from the books, the bowls, and the artist, David Roberts, is there, and he draws on a visualizer. Anyway, it's all great fun. And but I have to be careful, you know, that I don't cross that line. And there's a bit where I take questions from the darling children.
Yes.
And so I was question, and I said, would you like me to go up the back? Meaning a question from... But there were a couple of parents that laughed. I thought unnecessarily loudly.
But that's all stuff. I mean, what is joyous, I think, as a parent is when you can go and see something that works on those two levels.
Yes.
So, and, you know, it doesn't necessarily be rude, and but
well,
there's adult stuff and there's...
Because I write them, and my editor is paranoid that I'm going to get some filthy innuendo slip through that she hasn't noticed.
Yeah.
And to the point where, and I don't, you know, but she's furious. In the second book, there's a character called Roger the Sheep. And it was, honestly, it was not intentional.
You just can't help yourself.
It wasn't, no. I thought Roger would be a funny name for a sheep. We had a very stern email.
All the comedians are writing books now, but you've been doing this for a little while, haven't you? This has been...
I'm obsessed with it, yes.
Yeah.
Once you've created the characters, because it's about a family of hyenas, and it's a story I made up when I was 8 years old, and I didn't have any friends at that time. For reasons I won't bore you with, but I was in the garden and I used to watch the family next door, and they were a very hairy family. Mother had this lovely hair, and their father took his shirt off in the summer and he had hair all down the back. And I thought, wouldn't it be interesting if living next door was an animal, family of animals. No one knows except me. And then they were laughing one day, and they had a very loud, cackling laugh. And I said, that confirms it. They are a family of hyenas. So when they said write a book for children, that was the story I came back to.
Great.
And there's three published now, and I've just finished writing the fourth one, and there's going to be a fifth one, whether they want one or not.
And will it become a TV show and a film
and
a cartoon?
There's talk. I mean, who knows? There's a lot of talk about everything, isn't there? But anyway, I don't care. I just really... I've written adult books, which takes it out of you, you know. It takes a couple of years, and it's blood, sweat and tears. Children's books, about 25,000 words, and I just regress to being a child when I'm writing it. So, and I just have a lovely time.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah, it was the book is, you know, it's you did have a difficult childhood. I mean, the school you went to sounds appalling.
Oh yes.
And they then, well, like at the end of the chapter, there's a lot of, I don't know if you want to talk about it, there's a lot of unpleasant... You went to school with monks, basically.
Benedictine monks.
Yeah, which is never a good start, is it?
No, St. Benedict's kneeling. But about half of them are in prison now because they were all done for molesting boys. I was never molested, but... it's interesting what you know and or sense as a child. Because there was one monk mincing around, Father David, and... It's suspicious of him, even before I knew why.
Yeah.
You know, he was always coming in and out of the latrines. And anyway, he's just got 8 years.
But there was a lot of corporal punishment.
Oh, yes. They like to beat you. Each monk had his own weapon.
Yeah.
It was the 70s, not that long ago, but it was true. They, one of them had a strap, one of them had a cane, and one of them had a cricket bat. And one of them didn't have any weapon at all. So part of the ritual for... if Father Edmund wanted to beat you, you had to go and see Father Harrison and get the cane. So you had to walk right the length of the school carrying this cane, which he would then beat you with. And I was only beaten twice. Once for forgetting my swimming things.
Right.
Which was my loss because I liked swimming.
Yeah.
And the other time was when a boy called Robert Hines stole Father Gregory's strap. And Father Gregory said, if this isn't returned, I will beat the whole school. And we said, oh, don't give it back, you know. And so he didn't. And so we were all lined up around the playground and we were all beaten. It was called a mass execution. But we only got one each. And I went to the back of the queue because I knew his arm would be quite tired by then.
Yeah. It's sort of astonishing. I mean, I remember when corporal punishment was made like illegal.
Yeah, school. It wasn't soon after.
And I can't remember if I ever got it, but there was, you know, kids were slippered at primary school, and this was when you were quite young as well, wasn't it? So you were middle school, was it?
Was it right through?
But it's just the idea of an adult like who's meant to be educating.
Well, they justified
it. And a religious person.
Well, it was part of St. Benedict's rule.
Yeah.
That he said that boys must be beaten if they do anything wrong.
Yeah,
But it did, you know, it did attract dubious people to the vocation.
Yeah, but they asked you to if you wanted to make a contribution. Now you are famous to the school.
Oh, they did. Yes,
which you
told them to fuck off.
Yeah. Oh dear. Anyway, look, I think we might have to. It's been a lot of fun talking to you.
And you, who'd have thought?
I knew we'd make friends. but thanks so much for coming down. It's been really fantastic. Coming down. Fantastic.
Going down,
that would have been better. You're the master of it. I haven't talked about you farted in front of the Queen. I forgot about that.
Never mind.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Julie Clary. Listening to Richard Herring's That's the Spare Beer podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Julian Clary. The music's by Pess. We do it at the Leicester Square Theatre. Thanks to everyone here, and also everyone go past the Stripe and British Comic Guide and iTunes and all the other places to put it up. Thanks for helping out, guys. It's been alright, isn't it? The producer is Ben Walker, and it's a fuzz. Go past the Stripe and Sky Potato Production. Head to richardherring.com/gigs if you want to find out where I'm playing and if I'm coming near you at any point. Go to gofasterstripe.com and buy some stuff. There's an emergency questions book there. It is good. Thanks for listening. Go away now. Please leave. Goodbye. Thank you for coming. Goodbye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.